Minnesota Twins continuing their road game stretch. They got another game in Baltimore today, tomorrow, then a day off, and they'll be back home, Target Field. But we catch him out on the road in Baltimore. Chris Atterbury, the play-by-play of your Minnesota Twins, joining us live, checking out in Baltimore. How are we doing, my friend?
We're doing well. You know, it was an entertaining game last night. Had some home runs, great defensive plays, some big moments in a beautiful setting. Didn't go the way the Twins wanted to, obviously. Some two-strike struggles for Louis Varland. But you know what? It was the first day that felt like baseball season. It was 80 degrees, you know, decent crowd. Wasn't cold driving rain or in the 50s. And it felt like baseball. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, there's something about the when it, you can feel it in the air, and we're finally getting there. We had a day here on Saturday that was like 60 degrees, and we felt like that was baseball weather. So 80 would be very pleasant to be hanging out in. You mentioned Varland. Let's start there. He was quoted as saying, "Hey, look, I'm letting this team down." You know, and as you pointed out, it's the two strike pitches. You know, it's not that he's walking people; it's the fact that on that next pitch, he's just letting it hang over the base a little bit. I know that. Go ahead.
It goes to a bigger issue, right? And the bigger issue is he doesn't yet have that wipeout pitch. He doesn't have a wipeout slider. He doesn't have a pitch that induces chasing. And so hitters aren't getting themselves out. The positive from last night is that the velo carried. He was still throwing 97 in the fifth inning, and he threw a lot of strikes with it. And you think, okay, 97 in the strike zone, that's enough. But as a starter, it's really not, because you need something that can get them off your fastball. Teams are actually teeing off on that pitch, as good as its characteristics are. And, you know, we had a long discussion, Molitor and I, last night, and then Glenn Perkins and I over breakfast this morning. We're chopping it up, and this goes back to spring training. He doesn't have anything in his repertoire right now that isn't hard. And that fits with Louis' persona, right? He's a hard-driving, aggressive guy, and he's a great dude and a really good pitcher, but it's the hard fastball, the hard cutter, which he's added. He occasionally throws a breaking ball, but he only threw a handful of them, and until he got Couser with one late on an 0-2 pitch, you know, after being victimized by 0-2 cutters, he only used it kind of steal strike one. There's no, you know, change in velocity there or a chase pitch off the plate, and the lack of that type of pitch is really holding him back. You know, he's first inning, he almost got out of that jam after the air. He went cutter, strike, and then, you know, he doesn't have that slider in the dirt off the plate the guys chase, and so he throws another cutter, and the guy rips it to left field. So that's kind of where Louis is right now. It's the put-away pitch is just lacking. There's no real differentiation. Everything's hard, and that plays out of the bullpen a lot easier than it plays in the rotation, and guys are able to gear up on it right now.
This will show my level of being naive here. I mean, he's got three starts under his belt for this season, and, you know, I mean, however many games in the seasons prior, that to get that change, to have that change in speed, I mean, what's the time frame of learning something like that? Because you get in a rhythm, I assume, where, okay, this is what I do. I mean, that's – is that a mid-season thing that a guy can just, okay, well, I guess I got to change him now. I got a slider now.
It's hard, right? Yeah. Now, he went down last year and added the cutter, and it became a really good pitch for him. To add something with that stark of, as Perk says, slow the ball down, that's probably a little harder. It's just not kind of how he's built. His delivery is built aggressively downhill. His mindset's aggressively downhill. So I don't know if you can just ask that guy to back off without affecting other pitches. You know, is it a split? Some guys with their biomechanics are better suited to throw a split than other guys are. I feel like, because I think our pitching room does a really good job of figuring that stuff out, I feel like if he was a guy who was well suited to that pitch, we would have seen it already. You know, his changeup's not a bad changeup. He just doesn't throw it to right-handers, and, you know, he got hurt on it. Remember his first ever big league home run? I think it was Judge hit a changeup about a mile at Yankee Stadium. So I feel like that, you know, these guys have poured over all of that stuff. I mean, look at what they've done, turning him from the guy he was at Concordia to what he is now. And look at what they did with Simeon Woods Richardson, or Cole Sands is much better, the development with Joe Ryan. So I feel like the guys in the pitching room have a pretty good grasp on what a pitcher's body type and how they throw, like what it lends itself to. And so I feel like if they've been looking, you know, this is not something that just popped up because Perkins and Molitor and I thought it up. This is a pretty common thing that baseball people see. So So I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, he may well be better suited to just be a knockdown bullpen guy where he can get away with those two very hard pitches. But at this point, you know, the Twins need some starts, and we saw a good one from Simeon, but you know, they don't have a ton of depth in that department right now.
Well, hey, and that kind of leads us into injuries, you know, I mean, catching up to the Twins, and we've been doing this conversation for a number of years now, and we always acknowledge injuries are part of the game. Every team's going through it, but it certainly seems like in this first 4 weeks, it has caught up. I'm curious if that's changed any of the in-game decisions for Rocco as far as
– Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. No,
walk me through some of those.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
Well, who you start a shortstop is the first one, right?
Yep.
Do I have the best defensive shortstop in the world, or do I have to decide between Castro and Farmer? Castro, higher ceiling, more errors, Farmer, less range, more solid, different bats. But more importantly, it's the domino effect. If those guys have to start, and right now they have to start in two spots, right? Throw Miranda into that three-headed monster, but with Lewis out too. Now the guys that you were counting on to come off the bench to give you an advantage late in the game have to start the game. So now when you dip down to try to find an advantage and a platoon advantage late in a close game, you just don't have the tools at your disposal that you did before. So that attrition is real. And, you know, the other day, that play in the eighth inning, you know, Willie didn't handle one, Kyle didn't handle one, Jax ends up taking the loss, 4-run eighth inning. You know, that shouldn't be those three guys. That should be Carlos, Royce, and Durant. But again, people get hurt, and that's part of the game, and nobody's going to cry for you or hit the pause button until everybody gets healthy. The bigger issue to me, that the stranger issue, and maybe the one that you really need to dig into, is that all the minor league guys are hurt. You know, Brooks Lee would have been here, but guess what? Brooks hasn't played a single minor league game yet after a fantastic spring. It was a back spasm in spring, and yet he's still out and hasn't played. That's not good. Walker Jenkins didn't play in a lot of games in spring with a quad, got better, made a running catch, pulled his hamstring. He's still out at the lower levels. Even a guy like Aaron Sabata was out in Wichita. So Trevor Larnach was out, you know, with a toe injury. So you just – there's no bodies. I mean, Jair Camargo is here as our last position player, and he's here because the only other position player on the 40-man was Junior Severino, who was hitting 079 with no position. So it's like suddenly – you don't have those guys. You know, this is the spot where we had Nico Goodrum in camp. You're like, okay, here's a guy who in an emergency, you break glass, you bring him up, and he's a pro. He's been here before. Well, he had an elevator opt-out where he was able to go to Tampa Bay because they were going to put him on the active roster. And so you're like, dang, we lost that insurance. And then, boom, you lose the left side of your infield, and who's left, you know, to come up? And so it's really – there's a gap between the big league ready guys and the next wave of prospects who are all double A or lower. And that gap is massive. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a fight for the Twins to keep their heads above water till they can get some of their main dudes back. And that's not even touching on the fact that Kepler's still out, though he's running the bases. Topa's still out. Gilbar's just back. Byron Buxton playing a lot defensively, but he does not appear to be in any way, shape, or form completely healthy at the plate.
Yep.
So that's always a touch and go situation. So yeah, injuries happen. It's part of the game. What are you doing to try to prevent them in the minor league? Some are unpreventable. But when there's so many of them, you start having to reexamine your processes and try to figure out, you can't wrap these guys in bubble wrap, but how are we training? How are we working in the off season? What are we doing? How are we doing it in order to try to limit this the best we can? Because time and time again, the data will tell you the healthiest teams are the best teams.
Yeah, well, and the list you just rattled off there kind of had me sitting back in the studio here and saying, oh, geez, you know, I mean, you think about those top names, right? And, of course, I was going to ask about Correa because we know about the 10 days because of being on the injured list. It sounds like it's a minor right intercostal strain, which I had to look that up, and I'm like, okay, just say it's an ab strain or something. I'm a lazy man.
I was like, I'm on the inner harbor, not the intercostal. I didn't even know what that was.
I didn't either. I still don't.
Yeah.
But I
think it's better news for him, right? Like,
that's
it's better
heard
than being a really bad oblique. So he'll be back sooner as opposed to the 6 to 10 weeks you could sometimes get from an oblique. Durant is here.
Yeah.
He is throwing a second bullpen in Baltimore. So that's good news. But there have been a lot of injuries, you know, and then on top of that, you know, the guys have to perform. I mean, Max is hurt, and that's bad, but Max was also 1 for 20, and that's bad.
Yeah, well, and it, like you say, we no one's going to be feeling sorry for us, but it kind of gives you a moment of pause because it feels like over the first 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that, man, we just can't get in this rhythm. And then, of course, it seems like at least 1 week to a week where we're seeing someone else kind of pop up on that list, and it's part of the game. Chris Atterbury is our guest in out in Baltimore right now. Before I let you go, Chris, I know you got to get running here. You've been a few weeks in now as the play-by-play. Is there anything that surprised you now in this early part of the season about how your life has changed being the radio voice here?
Not really. I mean, it's the work has been great. And I have to tell you, I was just sending a text to our broadcast director this morning. The whole group of broadcasters and I just the melding of the TV and the radio guys has been really good. Corey, and whether it's Justin or whether it's Glenn on this trip, you know, who's going to work with me later, Molly's with me on this trip, Danny is taking this one off, like whether it's Danny, Morning, Molly, or Perk, like it's all like we're one big group. So we're swapping notes, we're swapping stories, sharing information, we're going to meals together. Like it's kind of a big old happy family, and I think that's really nice. It's a good environment, it's a good vibe. And I think it makes both broadcasts better. And so after the game, we'll go out and we'll sit. And we had breakfast today, Corey and Glenn and I again. And it was like, hey, we said this. What were you guys talking about that play? And I think everyone wins. TV watchers win and radio listeners win. And it's very pleasant for us. So that's been the most fun. Yeah. It's just the collaboration and the happy little vibe with this whole group. And it's, for me, great. Like, you know, Danny's fantastic. I've worked with him forever. He brings a certain very unique edge to the broadcast. And then Molly's very unique and obviously incredibly intelligent, insightful, and accomplished. And then Perk will bring a whole different energy to that. So I think we really have a wonderful cast to work with in this. And it's been fun for me, and I'm glad I get to be just a little bitty part of it.
Well, you guys having fun makes it sound fun. The only thing that'd make it just a little bit more fun is if we get a couple more W's by the time that you and I chat again next Tuesday, Chris. It's always fun to catch up, and we'll do it again next Tuesday. You take care until then, all right?
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, Chris Atterbury, ladies and gentlemen, the play-by-play on the radio side of your Minnesota Twins. This conversation every week brought to you by Linex for your truck accessories and so much more. You can find them on Main Avenue in West Fargo. And Jiffy Lube, where you can get more done in a jiffy with their three area convenient locations. Twins pregame does get underway at 5 o'clock here on KFGO. That first pitch about 5:35 right here on your home for Twins baseball, KFGO.
Just like the Galleria. I'm like all these like really great shoe stores. I like love going into like clothing stores and stuff.